Happy Sabbath, everybody. Today's date is March the 7th, 2014. Our study is entitled Antitypical of Babylon. Let me draw your attention to Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 through 30. Verse 16 of Daniel 3. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods. I want you to understand that I have to pause here. Nebuchadnezzar was asking the church to serve his gods. And that point is made clear in this text. What text is that? That's verse 18 of Daniel 3. Let me reiterate. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Take yourself back to this episode as I pause with an interjection and see the courage of the saints in that day and how they were not intimidated, no matter how hot the fire was made. It should give us celebration as we appreciate the intimidations that are imposed upon us. Some of us are challenged by something as simple as paying our tithe. We look at the daunting experiences and the threats that would be directed towards us and the fears, but we've learned to fear God and to give glory to Him. And this lesson is underscored by this experience that we're reading in Daniel chapter 3. Continue with verse 21. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste, and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said unto the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loosed, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. And Nebuchadnezzar truly could not believe his eyes. Am I seeing things correctly? He asked his counselors. Have I lost my ability to count? Am I delusionary? That stuff that you have me smoking, does it affect in my mind? Maybe I'm suffering from heat stroke. So he appealed to the counselor. The counselor said, yeah, you're seeing right. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the kings, the counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose body the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. You've all sat around a campfire, haven't you? You come back and your clothes smell. That's not the case with these three Hebrew boys. We're almost done. Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god, except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, language, which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Usually I don't read this much, but I think it's important for us to understand the overriding theme of the Adventist message. The second angel's message tells you, Babylon, Babylon is fallen. The first angel's message commands that you begin to fear God. The spirit of prophecy and elucidation of these texts not only told us that as the scrolls were to unroll, we would have a better understanding of what they mean, and she said this at the end of her ministration, signifying that throughout her ministration, we, the church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, did not fully understand. But likewise, does she tell us that when it's more clearly understood, that we should put the books of Daniel and Revelation, combine them into a book and explain the meaning and distribute it throughout the churches. The reason why I allude to that is because you cannot understand the three angels' message unless you understand the story of Babylon. And the story of Babylon is captured in the book of Daniel. That's why it's so important. And chapter 3 is especially important because it gives us insight into what we read about Babylon and Babylon the Great in the book of Revelation. If you had read preliminary to this reading, chapter 1, you would have seen that Daniel was exalted to the seat of power in Babylon. Next highest to the king. We have a clearer meaning now of Daniel's burden for his sin. Remember we discussed 2 weeks ago how he was burdened for sin. Because if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were there, then Daniel had to be there also. But Daniel found occasion to bow down, and therefore he was vexed by the unclean stain that was registered against him, embarrassed by the fact that he did not have the power to stand up to the king. Don't let that shock you. Some folks don't understand that prophets are sinners too. If you don't think that they are, then you have failed to completely and fully understand what the Lord means when he says prophet. But I refer to Daniel chapter 2, the chapter where Daniel encouraged the concept of vegetarianism to preclude the Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, from eating from the king's table, his unclean food. And Nebuchadnezzar, after Daniel had answered his astonishing dream about the image, remember the one that was made of a head of gold, breast of silver, belly of brass, legs of iron, and the toe portion of iron and clay, was smitten with a stone at its feet. And that stone that was cut out of the mountain grew and became a kingdom. And because Daniel was able to not only reveal the vision to Nebuchadnezzar, but to interpret it, he was promoted as highest in the land. And the reason why that's important to remember is because Daniel nudged Nebuchadnezzar. He says, I got some people that I want to give a hookup to. The only reason why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were given office was because Daniel got them their jobs. They were close friends, and Daniel played a little politics, and making it much more difficult now. You know, it's hard to defy people who place great trust in you and endowed you with great gifts and great authority and great power. And this had to be one of the reasons why Nebuchadnezzar was so angered with them. Prior to that, history shows us that Nebuchadnezzar ascended to great power himself in the earth. He was considered a world ruler, not because his kingdom reached all regions of the earth. It's important to understand. But because he controlled the Lord's land, Palestine. What does that mean? To accomplish such a feat by seizing God's people means that no other power on the earth had the prowess to resist him. The fiery furnace episode was Nebuchadnezzar's second conviction of Christ. As mentioned already, the first pertained to the subject of the prior chapter, the dream of an image of a man destroyed by the church kingdom. He was elevated to power in the earth, and now he became a better Christian with the text that we just read. You heard that he pronounced a sentence of death on anybody that defied the name of Christ. Christ became the center of his theology. You would think that that would be praiseworthy. You would think that that would be enough to close the book on Babylon and expose it as a nation of virtue, ruled by a king par excellence. After all, Christ became the centerpiece of his theology. He declared him as being more powerful than any other god. Yet, Christ was not his only god. He worshipped other gods and continued to do so. And if you read very carefully the next chapter, you'll see that he called Daniel by a name given to him by one of his other gods. Imagine he's sitting in communion with the spirits that he would consult with. And they would talk about Daniel. The spirits said, what'd you call him? They call him Daniel. No. Don't call him Daniel. Call him Belteshazzar. Therefore, he called Daniel by the name given to him by one of his other gods. What does Belteshazzar mean? If you understand that, then you could pierce into the deception that was going on. Belteshazzar means the indwelling of other holy gods. Hence, all of Christ's work was nullified by the lies of the devil. Just because somebody proclaims the name of Christ, and we can understand this in the land that we live, We're surrounded by people that extol the name of Christ, but they're bowing in obeisance to other gods. And their secret lodges. They are in continuous communion, and these are the powers that forge and govern their religious experience. Every astonishing act done by God is reversed by their life. Let me read you a little bit of that. Let's read verse 7 through 9 of chapter 4. Hey, we're going to learn something about Babylon from reading about ancient Babylon. You can't understand America, this land that says it was founded by God, broadcast that on his dollar bills, proclaims to the world, "In God we trust." So did Nebuchadnezzar. You see? Yet and still, the genesis of their deeds, the path that they follow, is governed by secret society devotion. Daniel chapter 4, verse 7 through 9. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. Now understand, this is chapter 4. It comes right after the fiery furnace experience. And I told the dream before them. Nebuchadnezzar is defining another dream. But they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. He hadn't learned his lesson yet. He's still looking for the magicians and the soothsayers to tell him of his dream. They couldn't do it, so the devils lied to him. You go to Daniel. We're in him too. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, didn't even get his name right. O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. Daniel revealed to him the vision, and I'm sure the devils that surrounded the king were taking careful notes. They said, we got this thing now. We got our guy sitting on the throne, and he gives credit for Christ to us. Oh, we've got the world. You've heard the song. He's got the whole world in his hands. That's the credit that the devils were ascribing to themselves. But when Daniel opened up the dream, it did not reflect so kindly on Nebuchadnezzar and his demonic cohorts. He was told that he would lose his power and that he would be driven into the field and be given the mind of a beast, and that seven times would pass over him for 7 years. Why would the Lord curse such an individual who just made a pronouncement? You can't speak against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Because the devils had made an end round of that pronunciation. And they gave credit to themselves for Daniel's prowess. Of course, as we look at the matter now, those in this day and hour who can discern judgment, we can acknowledge that Daniel was responsible for some of this. Nebuchadnezzar had to be mindful. Hey, well, Daniel bowed down and worshiped. Therefore, he must be one of us. So, we can't spend too much time now on Daniel chapter 4, but we're not through. We just need to know from reading this that Nebuchadnezzar represents the world-ruling theological power today. The Anglo-Saxon forces who have dominated the globe these past 400 years. When you therefore read that Babylon controlled all nations, it doesn't make sense, because you can't really understand how he could control Japan or China or Australia or Peru. The only way that he was credited as controlling all nations, that no other power on earth could rise up and seize Palestine unless God had given the permission. But more important than that, that he is given to us as a symbol to represent America. In fact, to represent the English-speaking power, which America has evolved and advanced toward. And that those 7 years of destitution represent the installation of the Lord's kingdom before Babylon the Great reemerges. Babylon the Great reemerges, if you read the next chapter, under, it calls the next ruler, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar. And then that's when the kingdom was overthrown. Therefore, if we want to give a synopsis of the book of Revelation from the experience of Daniel, we could see that it's not America's time to be completely overthrown. The kingdom is going to be established, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to lose his ability to control the people who leave and unite with the kingdom government. Then it's going to reemerge, and it's going to be overthrown as the 144,000 go and evangelize from the Sunday-keeping churches and from all the other nations of the world. And that's going to cause the fall of Babylon and the rise of what we refer to as Assyria. These things are going to be made more clear to us as we advance in study. We began by reading verses 16 through 30 in Daniel chapter 3. Let us revisit some of those texts with a little bit more introspection. Verse 16, it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom ye serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. It should be made clear that what Nebuchadnezzar demanded of the world was that they violate the second commandment, and that they bow down and worship his image. And you need to understand the pressure that rested upon these three men. Look back with a little bit more reflection and understand the trauma that they were subjugated to. Everybody else of the people of captivity complied with the mandate and bowed down to worship. But the three Hebrew boys determined that they were not going to worry about the social pressures. They were not going to worry about how they looked to their families. They were not going to be disturbed about how their subordinates on the job saw them, or their superiors. Daniel, I know for a long time now that we've been good buddies. We've communed together. But I can't join you in this thing. I know you got me the job. And I know it's an embarrassment to you. You've got to answer to the king. I trusted you, Daniel. I've established these people, and now they're defying my government. Doesn't matter. And this is what I want you to see. They said, I'm going to stand for Christ. I'm going to stand firm by him. I would rather be destroyed than to violate his word. And although we've shown in publication that Christ made accommodations to clean his church apart from the literal atonement ritual, we see here that this reflects upon the small group of people that are going to emerge and are going to have their lives preserved. Don't expect everybody in the church to stand by Christ. Don't be ashamed if you're the only one. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. I like what the testimony of Jesus has to say about this. We can never really conduct a study without gaining clearer insight from the testimony of Jesus. I refer to Luke chapter 17. Let me just cite to you verse 24 through 27 and verse 33. Jesus said, "For as the lightning that lighteneth out of the one part under heaven and shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day." Special meaning. This has never been fulfilled. We need to understand that the day is going to come when it's going to be the day of the Son of Man. Doesn't say he's going to come in the clouds and destroy the wicked with his brightness. It says he's going to be like the lightning. If the lightning smites in one part of your city and they see it in another part, that's the way the day of the Son of Man is going to be. The electronic media is going to broadcast those things that he does so that everybody will be able to see. I just read that verse to give you the proper context of what we're talking about here. But first must he suffer many things and be rejected of this generation. So the suffering of Jesus, likewise defined as the Son of Man, was to take place in that day, before the day of glory of verse 24 takes place. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the day of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And the flood came and destroyed them all. It's talking about a devastation that's going to come. Noah represents the church as it existed in the antediluvian time. And this destruction makes reference to the destruction that's going to take place in the church among those who are not faithful. Now the text that I want you to see, verse 33. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it. And whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. And that relates well with our study. And it shows us the preservation of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego amidst all of the people in the church. They told the king, "We're willing to lose our life." And because that was their profession, the Lord preserved it, making them a true type for this hour. It points to the day when men will be made invincible to death. You see, that's part of the three angels' message that we need to understand from the book of Daniel as it's connected with the book of Revelation. The reason for those who are going to be destroyed and the destruction that's made parallel to the days of Noah is not because the church does not understand or cannot understand, but it's because they ignore the claim and the cry of the first angel's message. Rather than being fearful of God, they are fearful of embarrassing themselves in front of men. It's impossible to pass the test of judgment without passing the test of peer pressure. The devil is going to come at you from the people that you respect the most. And they're going to say, "I'm shocked that you could do such a thing. I'm disappointed. I thought that you were a better person. You're nothing better than David Koresh." You see, And your destiny is going to be like his. You're going to be destroyed in the fires of the Babylonian oppression. We learned in verse 25 of chapter 3 that the Lord will preserve his own. I tell you, you can't understand the three angels' message if you do not understand Babylon. The second angel's message declares its fall. It is obviously not speaking of ancient Babylon, but another power that actually does rule the planet. Therefore, let me just revisit a style of Bible understanding. How the Lord actually uses events that happened yesterday to describe to us and give us understanding the events that are going to be unfolded today. And this helps us to understand his definition of a prophet as he conveyed to Miriam and Aaron, his proclivity to reveal through the prophet's dark speeches. The things which they say and which they reveal have direct benefit, but the greatest benefit comes from the understanding of how they apply to the gospel message as it is sent to enlighten the world. We learned 2 weeks ago in our study that that's Father's purpose. He's the one that rules this thing. And Christ and Jesus and all those that are on his team merely seek to honor his purpose and his desire. The demographics of world history show there's 7 billion people on the planet today, and we made mention in our last study that it's therefore as a consequence his burden to save this generation. Never before have there been this many people on the planet. Every episode in Bible history was to prepare for the day of the great harvest. For we saw in John chapter 15 that he desires that we bear much fruit. How much is much fruit? If you go out to the vineyard that covers acres, and you get a bushel of grapes, that's good. But if he wants much fruit, he wants you to get more. He wants you to go into every pocket of the vineyard and garner fruit. That's his goal, his desire, and his yearning. It may be that you don't appreciate the fruit. You may not even like grapes. Or you may not like red grapes, you might like purple grapes. Or you might like white grapes, or green grapes. Or you may like jumbo grapes. Somebody else might like raisins. Father says, go out and gather them all. It's not your kingdom, it's my kingdom. And I need all the harvest. So I say that we understand and we review the excesses of Babylon as defined in the book of Daniel, because we are seeking the antitypical understanding. And there are some people that call themselves theologians that suggest that that's inappropriate, that you should only understand what's written and not give expanded meaning. But we see from many scriptures that that's not the way the Lord manifests his style of teaching. For example, in Isaiah 58, he shows you that the experience of Jacob was made applicable to the people that are going to rule the planet in the last day. He says, I'll feed you with the heritage of Jacob. In other words, the lessons and the inheritance that were promised to Jacob, I will unfold those lessons to you. Well, we've already read the lessons. They're in the book of Genesis. No, you've read the lessons, but you haven't read the antitypical application. What are some of the other events that have antitypical application? The kingdom anciently applies to the kingdom everlasting. Luke 22:16 shows us that the Passover itself was symbolic. Just before the Lord was crucified, he told his disciples, I will not again eat of the Passover until it be fulfilled in the kingdom. Which expresses you in clarity the Lord's proclivity to teach through antitypical application. The experience of the Passover was real. The people were real. The enemies of the people were real. Their barbs and their attacks on Moses were real. And all of that was written for our admonition and for our understanding, because the day is going to come when it's going to be fulfilled. And we can only understand the fulfillment of the Passover when we understand how Israel is going to be delivered gloriously, and 144,000 are going to be gathered in. And that is the fruition of the Passover. The Lord is going to celebrate communion with you and Passover with you, not in the 1st century, not in the 5th century, not in the 17th century, but in the day that is now approaching upon this generation, when the lessons of the Passover are to be fulfilled. Matthew chapter 24, the Lord points back to Daniel and gives him great honor. He says, when you understand the transgressions of desolation, I'm loosely quoting, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, let he who readeth understand. He anticipated that we would be recorded and that we would gain lessons from the experiences and the records that were given to us and handed to us in the book of Daniel. But Nebuchadnezzar was an impressive king. I have to acknowledge it. And his experiences are quite amazing. Reading chapter 3 of Daniel, verse 24, it says, then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste, and spake, and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said unto the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. As I reflect back to my church experiences, and I remember the day after sitting in a moving sermon, they would have an altar call. The music would be playing, perhaps, all to Jesus I surrender, all to Him I freely give. And the minister would so skillfully, with the power of the Spirit, call people to come down to the altar. But Nebuchadnezzar was having his altar call. You see, instead of approaching the altar of the church, he approached the fiery furnace. And we find out in verses 27 and 28, and the princes and the captains and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose body the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their heads singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. How did they see them? Well, let's read back a little earlier in the book. Verse 26 of Daniel chapter 3. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning of a fiery furnace, and spake and said, let's see if you can get the picture here. Here was the king who considered himself almighty on the earth, who created an image of self-reflection and demanded people to bow down and worship it, who got mad because somebody said, no, I'm going to worship my God, but I promoted you. You'd be nothing without me. Not only am I going to destroy you, but I'm going to intimidate you before all these people. Such a man now had to, what is the right expression? Eat crow. Swallow his pride and watch how Nebuchadnezzar does it. It says, he came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace. How close did he get? I'm not sure. Did he step over the soldiers who could not contain the heat? Perhaps he got that close in faith. And he made an appeal and said, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. I was mad with you. I was upset. And now I see the point that you've made. I'm convicted by your religion. I know that you serve the Most High God. This is a day of conversion. The English-speaking empire is the empire that embraced Christ. They fell in love with him, and so did Nebuchadnezzar. Their challenge was to divorce themselves from their other gods. And this is what the Adventist ministry was called to enlighten them to do. And this is what our commission is. The Lord wants to gather fruit from every corner. He says, all manner of sins shall be forgiven unto men. And now the king says, come forth. I want to be the person of the first embrace. I want to have a closer connection with you. I'm impressed by your faithfulness. I'm amazed by your wisdom. Doesn't matter that you defied me. Everybody around here has seen my humiliation, and I'm stepping before the furnace to show them all the more that this king is not so high and mighty that he can't be humbled by God. People walking around talking about the Masons, talking about the Illuminati, 666. Another one now, the reptilians, they call them, you see. They got all type of fear. But I tell you that you cannot burden yourself with the excesses of revelation unless you understand the book of Daniel. 666 has got no power. The Masons are enveloped in false worship. And some of them are going to step forward for Christ. Some of them, contrary to what people think, have not gone beyond the boundaries whereby they cannot be reached by the Lord. They all saw this experience, and they all went home appreciating and understanding that Christ redeems his people. And that no matter how they learn to worship their false gods in the lodge, they cannot prevail over the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. Wouldn't that be a special thing? You see, you could make up all type of lies about what you see in the fire. If they never come forth, it doesn't matter. But when they step over the hot, molten, burning bricks and step on into the normal climate of the room, and you could handle them and touch them and see that the only thing that was on them that got singed and burned was the ropes that Nebuchadnezzar put on them. Their hats were straight, their coats and suits were clean, their shoes were polished and nice. They came forward with full restored dignity. And then Nebuchadnezzar could appreciate the fact that Daniel gave him a hookup with these men. He got an opportunity to fellowship directly with somebody that was more glorious than him. What a testimony you'll be in this day when you stand faithful for the Lord. I think we make a mistake as Adventists. And I know why we do it. We think we could get large numbers by scaring people about conspiracy theories. You see. No, that person is 666. Or the devil has got a plan that he's going to take over the planet. He can't take over any planet unless the Lord ordains the people that he deploys. And when the Lord ordains them, the devil's going to lie and say that they're mine. Just like he lied and said Daniel was his. He told Nebuchadnezzar and his magical cohorts that the gods that they worship are holy, and they're all in Daniel. But you can't appreciate Revelation chapter 13. And we as Davidians have missed this portion of the lesson unless you understand the book of Daniel and marry the two together. It doesn't matter the death decrees that 666 pronounces upon those who refuse to worship the image. It doesn't matter because the Lord is going to give victory to his faithful. But it's helpful to also read Daniel to see that you're living in a culture that has joined and united worship of Christ pretentiously with secret society worship. I wrote a letter to my brother and I said, because you're a Mason, I'm not impressed with any of the credentials or any of the people that you know. If one of your lodge brothers knows my attorney, and that doesn't make me feel as if you have a connection with the executorship that you can overwhelm me, I'm not impressed upon it. In fact, I said, you need to read my paper because it shows that even though you've stepped out into that field of study, and although you have been engulfed in that demonic form of worship, and though you are in communion with foul and evil spirits, the Lord can save and rescue you. And I told him that what you need to do is what you and I did 48 years ago. But this time, you need to come and respond to my altar call. You need to give your heart to Christ and gain victory. But people feel fearful. They feel intimidated. They're told that if you do such and such a thing, that you'll lose your job. I told them in another email that I worked along with a lot of the Lodge brothers, and it seemed like every time there was a layoff, the Lodge brothers were the first ones to go. You see, the Lord preserved me, and they are the first ones to go. I could recount with you a lot of experiences. The point I'm trying to make is that there's nothing to be fearful if you have the faith of the three Hebrew boys. I remember my first job, I was anticipating a promotion, and the district manager came and wanted to sit and talk with me and began to flash his Masonic ring. I could see the symbol on it. You see what I'm saying? And saying, you know, after 2 years, we'd like to promote you and whatnot. And I didn't know where the conversation was gone. So I went out. I had a field duty. And my manager said, oh, Rose, that was the name of the district manager, the one that was sitting and talking with me, he needs for you to contact him immediately. It was Thursday. I tried to call him. Couldn't get to him. Friday, he took off. He wanted to go to see, to watch the Penn State game. Came in Monday morning. He died of an aneurysm, you see. So that pressure, whatever the devil thought that he could impose upon me, never occurred. Remember another case, the guy that hired me at the latest employment that I left, it seemed that he was under a great deal of pressure because I wasn't a Mason. He says, you know, so he invited everybody out on Friday for a drink. But see, the Lord, because of my fastidious, I don't frequent bars and drink. So I didn't come. Monday morning, oh, Larry was looking for you. Where's Derek? You see what I'm saying? And you know, after that, I guess he found out that he had made a mistake in hiring me, and that the pressure that he was feeling from the salespeople in the field, they wanted somebody of their own to communicate with their customers, that he became very antagonistic towards me and very critical. And a couple weeks later, they transferred him out of the company. You see what I'm saying? So you don't need to worry about the pressures that exist in Babylon and their false form of worship, their pretension of standing for Christ, while at the same time they secretly worship the devil. You need the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You need to stand tall, because you're living in the day of antitypical Babylon. This experience was given for your admonition, so that you, and I say you, I'm talking about mustard seed Adventists, people that have advanced in light and knowledge, so that you can stand tall. I didn't get a lot of promotions. Vinette and I, we went through great trauma. We've been praying and fasting and broadcasting resumes all over the country, and we would never get any traction. I finally learned that the Lord didn't want me to have a better job. That little bit of money that I made was easy for me to leave behind when I quit. But he more than made up for it through Vinette. And throwing money at her feet, I'd have to argue, struggle to get on my performance evaluation, barely achieves expectations. Vinette was getting evaluations, exceeds and excels beyond our, you know, wildest dreams. She would on occasion, they would give her, by mistake, $1,000 in addition to what she deserved. She'd go to her manager and say, "This is wrong. I calculated it's wrong. I know it's wrong." "So you're a hard worker. You deserve it. Forget about it." See, when you serve the Lord, you got to know when to stop arguing. And she learned that lesson quickly. And therefore, our home was improved and protected and was guided, and we stood firm because we honored the Lord. Therefore, the message of this lesson is that in the three angels' message, we need to understand that the powers of Babylon are fallen, and that we need to prepare to divorce ourselves from those powers. We need to fear God. We need to make a Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego firm stand for the Lord. Let the chips fall where they may. We need to understand by faith that there's no power in hell or on earth that can destroy you. These people are going crazy with fear. They even try to prepare missiles so they can knock asteroids out of the sky. They may threaten the earth. You and I, we don't have to worry about those things. And certainly we don't have to worry about 666, the mark of the beast, or any of those things. Let the losers in the church vex themselves over that, like they did yesterday. That's the reason why they were scattered into Babylon. Let them vex themselves over that. Let us stand firm for the Lord. And with that, I bring the study to a close.